This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisen and Noel Lim.
And at the end of last week, if you take a look at capital markets, Japan was in the green. The Nikkei was up 0.6%, but the rest of the region closed the week in the red. The Hang Seng was down 1.5%, Shanghai was down 0.7%, Singapore was down 0.3%, and the FBM KLCI was down 0.1%. But US markets bucked the trend. They didn't bark up the tree, they bucked the trend. The Dow was up 0.7%, and the S&P and NASDAQ were both up 1%. So it'll be interesting to see how Asian markets open later today.
Yes, indeed. And so for some insights into what's moving markets, we have on the line with us this morning Bernard Au, Asia Pacific economist at Coface. Bernard, good morning. Thank you for joining us today. So retail, transport and construction have been some of the hardest hit sectors here in Asia due to the pandemic. Which one do you think will recover first?
Yes, I think you're quite right in that they are the hardest hit sectors in Asia because of public health measures and behavior changes in consumption and traveling. The outlook for these three sectors still remains quite challenging because of the current Delta surge and low vaccination rates across the region. Moreover, within each sector, especially in retail and transport, there are still quite a number of differences. So if you look at retail, companies that were able to pivot strongly to e-commerce were able to offset some but not all of the losses due to closures of physical retail shops. And in transport, you can see that passenger air travel and public transportation are still under tremendous pressure because of mobility and international travel restrictions in many parts of the region, as well as remote working arrangements if they are able to do so. So we look at high-frequency indicators such as Google mobility trends, which shows that public commuting remain well below pre-pandemic levels in Asia. But sea transport may benefit because of the export boom that we are seeing in this part of the world. The construction sector suffered too because of reimposed restrictions in many parts of this of Asia, with their problems compounded in some cases by rising cost of materials and labor shortages. So you can see that the outlook for this sector still remain not quite optimistic. But if I have to pick among the three, I would say that construction will probably recover faster than the other two sectors because there are many infrastructure and housing projects still pending. And if the COVID situation permits, construction activity will bounce back quite quickly. And this is really what we saw in the first quarter of this year, where activity in the construction sector surged as economies ease some of their health measures.
Meanwhile, semiconductor supply issues continue to affect industries. How long do you estimate this shortage problem will persist?
So, the negative impact is definitely growing, and especially in the automotive sector, but also starting to affect consumer electronics. We expect this chip shortage to last until at least the first half of next year, 2022. But the impact itself on the export-led recovery in Asia, we do see quite a number of that because we are seeing an increasing number of car makers announcing temporarily production closures or reduction of output because of shortage of the auto parts, which is connected obviously to the chip shortage. And just last week, you saw Toyota announcing suspensions of vehicle production at several manufacturing plants in Thailand. Honda Motor also stopped production at a plant based in Japan because of supply chain issues. And at the same time, the producers of consumer electronics are also sounding the alarm that the shortage is spreading to production of television, to appliances, to smartphones, which could lead to then higher prices for these electronic devices. And from a trade perspective, the chip shortage will constrain the actual volume of electronics and automotive products that can be exported. But the value of such products may be less constrained because companies could raise prices to balance that supply and demand equation.
Bernard, export growth has been one of those bright spots in Asia in particular, in Malaysia for sure, albeit in a very doom and gloom situation where most industries have been closed, especially retail and such. How much of an impact do you see the chip shortage having in terms of the ability for Asian countries' export-led growth to continue? Are we going to see a tangible impact here?
So when we look at trade numbers figures, especially the headline numbers, it's usually the value of exports. So the chip shortage, my perspective is that it's going to impact the volume, but the headline numbers can still look quite nice because the value of these exports will be increased simply because of the supply and demand gap, and companies are able to raise the prices for some of these exports, which means that the value of exports itself will increase faster than, you know, the volume of exports. So my suggestion would be that we have to monitor not just the value of exports, there are the headline numbers, but also the volume of exports, which could show actually the growth is not as rosy as we were expect or we will foresee in the second half of this year.
Now, of course, we're also seeing the surge of the Delta variant across this region. So with that in mind, what is your outlook for corporate debt repayments in the Asia Pacific? Do you see the levels of distressed borrowing increasing?
I think that many companies so far need not turn to distressed borrowing to get through the difficult times because of fairly significant fiscal and monetary support in the region, such as loan guarantees, soft loans, wage subsidy, rental relief, and so on. But we do worry that what would happen as stimulus policy retreat, as what we have seen since the start of the year when some of the economies returned to more normal conditions before the most recent outbreak. But the economic recovery is not resilient yet, because many parts of Asia still has very low vaccination rate. We still see a lot of stop and go recoveries as governments reimpose lockdowns or tighten COVID measures. And these measures do in turn affect businesses, particularly those operating in contact intensive sectors such as retail, or those that require a large amount of labor in close proximity, such as construction. And I have concerns over some sectors which we are seeing increasing credit risk, according to COFAS annual Asia Payment Survey. And these sectors are your retail, construction, and transport, which we discussed earlier in your earlier question. They saw a very large increase in very long payment delays of more than 6 months. So by and large, the unevenness of this recovery, and this is not just happening in Asia, but you know, across the world as well, this really means that corporate debt repayment trends will have to be assessed on a sector-by-sector basis.
And to follow on your point about credit risks, do you expect Chinese property developer Evergrande's debt problems will have a contagion effect, or have they been largely contained?
I think there is a growing risk of financial contagion as, you know, the Evergrande seems to continue struggling to resolve its credit issues. And the situation for this heavily indebted developer does look bleaker than ever. And we are very concerned because of the sheer size of Evergrande's debt, which some estimates as about $300 billion US dollars. And this is around 80% of Malaysia's GDP. So it's a massive amount. Moreover, in recent months, we saw, you know, from news reports and so on, that if investors and state institutions appear to have lost faith in Evergrande's ability to meet its debt obligations. And just last week, the company's 20 million bank deposits were frozen by a local court at the request of a bank that lent money to the developer. So the risk that a major payment failure of Evergrande will affect China's financial system by weakening confidence in other highly leveraged real estate companies, shadow banks, and even some banks, is quite real and increasing. So even the fear of the potential contagion could have a serious impact on the country's credit markets. But the possibility of such a disorderly collapse that could cause widespread financial damage means that we think that the Chinese government is likely to intervene with financial support if they do foresee such a scenario coming to reality.
Bernard, last week Singapore's GIC released their results but warned that the outlook was challenging due to the low yield environment. What options are there in the fixed income space for better returns? Are low grade papers the only option looking forward?
I think that the investing space is getting more and more challenging, and this is this challenge is compounded by the uneven recovery in the global economy. In the Asia side of economy. So, you know, the search for yields have really driven investors, long-term investors or short-term investors, to search for more and more risky assets, like what you mentioned. So this is going to drive a lot of investors towards more risky assets to look for or for other assets that would generate a higher return than you know, your typical vanilla fixed income space. So I think that they are warning that it's going to be difficult. It's quite on the spot.
And would this compel more investments into like risky assets like Bitcoin?
I think that some investors could be considering the possibility of investing in Bitcoin, but at the moment, Bitcoin is still quite a speculative investment choice. So I think that at the moment, the institutional investor will not be looking at this type of highly risky asset class.
Bernard, thank you so much for joining us this morning. That was Bernard Au, Asia Pacific economist at Coface, based in Hong Kong, giving us some insight into what's happening in the global markets. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.